Boker Tov.
Good morning. So here we are, Parshas Bereishis, once again, thank God. I'd like to make an introduction. Introduce you to this Sefer, which is going to be the focal point of our discussion. It's called Olas Raya, or Olas Re'ia, which is a play on a halachic term, a sacrifice which is offered when a person arrives in the Beis HaMikdash. It is a Siddur Tefillah, with the commentary of the Olas Raya, or Olas Re'ia. In 1939, a man by the name of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook was the son of the great first chief rabbi of the modern settlement of Israel, land of Israel, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Rav Tzvi Yehuda publishes this work in two volumes called the Olas Re'ia. It is a collection of comments on the bottom of a siddur that his father, the late Rav Cook, had been working on. Now, this first volume, the first volume of this Sefer, is according to the weekday davening, and the second volume, which is what I'm holding in front of you, is the Shabbos davening and the Yontov davening. Way at the end of Shabbos, they have the section of V'yitin Lecha. V'yitin Lecha is a practice that is a section of psukim that many have the practice to recite on Motzoi Shabbos. It is a collection of brachos that people say because, as we know, of course, it's the bracha of Shabbos, it's the spiritual energy of Shabbos that nourishes us and blesses us for the entire week. So it's a great thing to start Motzoi Shabbos, to start the week with a series of blessings. So there's a whole sequence of blessings here. In the middle of this section about the blessings, Rav Cook has a little essay, a little monograph. This monograph, which is in the context of a pasuk va'achaltem achol v'savoa, is amazing. I just came across it. And not only does it shed light on explaining one of the most important and complicated and mysterious parshios that we have in this week's Torah reading, but it also, I think, really sets for us an important path in how we navigate our life in a contemporary setting. So to appreciate this piece from Rav Cook, we need to set the table to put a frame out there and a context. So let's start with the Pesukim. And a very well-known story. The Torah tells us in the beginning of Perek Beis, it tells us that the Ribono Shel Olam planted. Now, we don't know, obviously, these are deep secrets of the universe, what exactly these things mean. We don't know exactly where Gan and Eden are. It's a difficult thing to ascertain. There's actually a Tosfos, I think it's Tosfos and Bechoros. Tosfos and Bechoros, I think it's on Nunhei. Tosfos and Bechoros suggest that somewhere in the west of the world is Gan Eden. Then he has a discussion about that. And then he says there are actually two places. There's Gan and there's Eden. If you travel west, that's where you'll find it. So it's unclear exactly where west is vis-a-vis Tosfos, because Tosfos lived in France. They're west of Israel, but they're east of the United States. So people talk about this. Wherever this place Gan Eden is it in this world? Is there a portal to this world? Gan Eden! Let's go with that. And he put Adam Rishon there. And then what happens? Vayatzmach Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol eitz nechmod lamar v'tov l'maychol v'eitz hachayim b'soch hagan. And now the key, v'eitz hada'as tov v'ra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he vayatzmach means he caused to sprout from the ground all trees beautiful to look at and good to eat. And in the Besochagan, in the Tochagan, sounds like some of the Parshim say, in the middle of the gan, there was an Eitz HaChaim, a tree of life, and an Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa, which sounds like it's right near the Eitz HaChaim, in the center of the garden. Okay, what happens next?
Adam eats him.
Right, how does he eat from it?
Because the snake tricks the wife, and then she gives it to him.
Ah, so what does the snake say to the wife? He says, oh, God doesn't want you to eat from that tree because they eat from that tree. V'yisim keluhim yode'e tovara. Because the title of this tree, it has a name. It has a label. You know when you go to the botanic gardens, every tree has that little plaque. So you can imagine, Gan Eden, perhaps, it was a botanic garden. So every tree had a little label. Because otherwise, how would Adam Rishon know what he was eating? Think about that, right? So there's a conservatory. There's a little label that says pears, little one that says mint, little one that says apples. The Eitz HaDas was not an apple. And then there was a plaque that says Eitz HaDas Tovara. So what is this? What does it mean when we say that there was an Eitz HaDas Tovara? That's what we want to understand. Because understanding the Eitz HaDas Tov HaRa, what that means, will give us some insight into what was the nature of this mistake of Adam HaRishon. Because countless commentators are struggling how Adam HaRishon could have possibly made this mistake. Let's assume initially he didn't have a Yetzer Hara, or he had a Yetzer Hara, but it was external to him, or however you're going to understand it. How did he fall into this, and what changed? Because we know that before he ate from the Eitz HaDas, he and she, Adam and Chava, v'lo yispo shashu. They were not ashamed of the fact that they had no clothing. And now, after the chait of the Eitz HaDas, all of a sudden they know that they have no clothing, so they're ashamed. Well, something changes from before to after. So many, many commentaries address this question. I want to start with the Ramban, Nachmanides, for two reasons. Number one, because he's one of the most important commentators on the Tanakh. I'll give you one Maisa Shehaya just to prove this point in case you didn't believe it. They asked the Gaon, the Tzaddik, incredible person, this man who I knew, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. They asked him, if you were stranded on a desert island and you could only take one sefer, what would it be? He said, Ramban on the Torah. How about that? Anyway, the second reason is because this suggestion of the Ramban is a very problematic one for some of the other commentaries. Later commentaries, some of them, let's say Abarbanel has a very lengthy commentary on the Chumash, and Nechama Leibowitz has an entire essay focused primarily on Abarbanel, which is not what we're going to focus on today, but Abarbanel is very opposed to this. Initially, the Ramban quotes somebody who suggests that somehow this has to do with sexuality, the Eitz HaDas Tov HaRa. And he rejects that for a specific set of reasons, which we're not going to focus on today for time. But instead, he says, and you see it here, it's in the Rashi script on source number 2. He says, V'hayafa be'enai, what seems correct to me, is the following explanation. Ki ha'adam haya ose betivo masheroi lasos kafi hatolodos. It was appropriate. The person would do in his nature what was appropriate for him. Betivo, in his nature. Kafi hatolados, like the, literally laholid means to
give birth.
To give birth. In this case, it means essentially instinct. Natural inner instinct. Kasher yasu hashamayim, like the heavens. V'chol tzva'am. And all of the hosts. So wait a second. Does a star, or does a shooting star, or a comet, or the moon, does that need to wake up in the morning and decide if it's going to rise? No. Physics dictates that there is a natural orientation for this particular celestial body, and it just does that because that's innately what it's designed to do, and it follows its design. Poale emes, shepu'ulasam emes. They are truthful actors who act with truth. What does it mean they act with truth? What is truth? Truth is a reflection of reality. God created the sun that it should circle in a certain fashion, so it does that. That's an actual reflection. Velo yishanu es tafkidam. And they do not change their purpose. Ve'ein lahem b'ma'aseim ava osina. They do not have, what is ava and sina?
Love and hate.
Right. Love and hate are personal
emotions.
Right, emotions. They have some connotation of having a, not an agenda, but a nikia, a particular slant on something. They don't reflect the truth. They reflect your feeling about something. So that is what the Ramban says was Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet. That there was this innate sense of what he was supposed to do. And he was just doing what he was supposed to do. Upri ha'ilan hazeh hayamolid haratzon v'hachefetz. This fruit of this Eitz Hadas Tov Hara would create the ratzon and the chefetz sheyivcharu ochalav b'davar o behefcho l'tov l'ra. That created a desire or a motivation or an attitude to choose one or another. Initially, there wasn't a conscious choice. It was just instinct. If you put, I'm not a zoologist, but my impression is, if you take a bale of hay and you put it in front of an animal, the animal will eat the hay because its instinct is to eat lunch. You don't set an animal down Main Street and say, which restaurant do you want to go to today? It eats based on instinct. It's not based on a thoughtful choice. Of course, if you put two pieces of food down in front of an animal, it smells one, it'll figure out which is the better one. But that's all driven by instinct. It doesn't get a menu. So the Ramban says, before eating from the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, the person didn't have any desire, didn't have any ambition or agenda. It was just whatever innately was the right thing to do, he did. And now he has to struggle with, well, what is my ratzon? What do I want to do? Now, there's a big difference between what I want to do and what I ought to do. Case in point, and I'm not saying this l'ganai, I'm saying l'shvach, these delicious rogalach. After, I don't want to say how much eating over Sukkos, what ought I do? Not eat the rogalach today. What do I want to do? Just saying, these are delicious looking fresh rogalach. I want to eat the rogalach. So now, there's a shift, says the Ramban. V'lachein nikra eitz hadas tov hara, ki hadas yomer b'lashoneinu al haratzon. Das, and this is the key word we're going to keep coming back to. From the Ramban says, Das sounds like the word, it has the connotation of ratzon, of desire, of choice. And now he goes back to give you an example. The Pasuk says that Vayeda Adam, he doesn't use this pasuk, but this is, we'll get to it a little bit. Vayeda Adam es Chava Ishto. There was a physical union between Adam and Chava, and then she gave birth. The word Vayeda. So that word Vayeda, says the Ramban, he says, has this shift, meaning, before Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, his union with Chava was a union based on a biological drive to reproduce. Just like all the animals in the animal kingdom, they have an innate drive to reproduce and continue their species. But it wasn't a, what he called, lohaya bein adam le'ish v'ishto ha-mishgal le'ta'ava. It wasn't a source of passion or desire. It was just like every other function that they performed. But now, the idea of intimacy has a certain ratzon, a certain desire. Desire was introduced into the person, the das. So now, he says, when the people, Adam and Chava, looked at each other, they didn't look at each other in the same way. Now that they looked at each other with the eyes of desire, and now they felt ashamed. They felt ashamed that they didn't have privacy and personal dignity. But it's only, says the Ramban, after you introduce the factor of desire, right? Until you had desire, they weren't ashamed. Like, nobody would be ashamed to be seen, I don't know, putting something back in the closet with their hand. That's not something that is revealing about a person. That's not something that's a source of privacy. It's a basic activity. When you come home from the supermarket, you take your hand, you put something in the cabinet. There's no desire for that. That's just a natural process that happens after you go shopping. But now the Ramban says that the Eitz HaDa'as Tov HaRa introduced the concept of desire into the person. And the way it colors the glasses through which the way it's going to see the world is now going to be through the eyes of desire. And what interests the person is not motivated by what innately should be done, but it's what the person wants to do based on this new element of desire. Okay? That's the Ramban's approach. So, any questions? So far, so good? The Rambam is very upset about this. Now, the Rambam lived before the Ramban. The Rambam preceded the Ramban because the Rambam died in 1204. The Ramban was born just around that time, at the end of the Rambam's life. The Ramban dies in the 1270s. The Ramban makes an assumption about man before the chait. What is the assumption that the Ramban makes about man before the chait? Based on what we said.
Simple person.
Right, simple. And not only is he simple, what kind of capacity for choice did he have?
Well, based on that, nothing.
Yes.
Everything that he did was instinctive.
Exactly.
As opposed to by choice.
Exactly.
So he didn't have any choice.
When does he have choice?
Only after he eats from the tree.
Because then he has to now, Cheshben, oh. Who is very upset about this? The Rambam is very upset about this. Because the Rambam, he writes this at length in Hilchos Tshuva. And he writes in other places, we'll see in a second, the Mor Nevuch. And the Rambam writes that essential to being human is the capacity for choice. That is definitional to being human.
That's what differentiates us from animals.
So the Rambam says, how could you say, he's not speaking to the Ramban, but if they sat at a table, one next to the other, you can imagine, the Ramban says his pshat, and the Rambam says, I can't accept that pshat.
So that's shigriyeng.
Totally. The Rambam says, and so now you turn the page, see, source number 3, this was in 1903, there was a scholar by the name of Friedlander, who translated the Rambam's Mora Nevuchim, the guide for the perplexed, and the Rambam says, you're totally wrong. We'll get to this piece in a second inside. The Rambam says, no way! He said, someone asked me a question. What happened from before to after the sin of the Eitz HaDa'as Tov HaRa? So someone suggested that's what happened. Adam Rishon didn't have choice and now he has free choice. The Rambam says, absolutely not! Because it is essential to being human is to have a choice.
So based on that, he could have said, if we go with the other story,
with Ramban?
Story, no, with the other story where Eve tempts him.
Yes.
The apple, the fruit,
yeah.
The whatever it is.
Yeah.
Based on that, if he had had free choice, he could have said, no, I don't want it. But if it's instinctive, where is the choice
there? Oh, okay, good.
If he really had, if he was really acting on instinct only, and she said, here, eat this, and then instinctively, he would say, okay.
Can you pass down, pass one down, please, too?
It's okay.
Abam Kasha from Fern, which is, I don't understand, how did he get to first base initially if he was only based on instinct? So perhaps, perhaps the key line, which we didn't see inside, is that when they looked at the tree, they saw that it was Savahu La'inayim, desirous to the eyes. Somehow, the way that they perceived the tree by looking at it introduced to them the concept that there's something called desire. The way that they looked at it, I saw some of Farshim essentially say that, that helps bridge the gap. That by looking at the tree and seeing it as an object of desire already shifted him away from instinctive. Because that's a bomb kasha. I was wondering the same thing. Many Mefarshim are struggling with that because you couldn't get to...
How did you get to
first base?
How do you get from one to
That's exactly it. Oh, so... But how did that process happen? So perhaps it's by looking at the tree. Okay.
But if in fact it's questionable as to what was the tree, what was it that they ate?
So it's so the Gemara says it's either a gefen, right, or a chita, or maybe teina,
different things, one or of whatever. So then that begs the question. Was everything that they were looking at then suddenly, for some reason, became desirous in their eyes?
Before or after?
Both their eyes.
Before or after?
Before they ate.
Well, before, it sounds like this tree in specific was Sava Le'inayim, was desirous to the eyes. This was the tree. So the Rambam says, now the Rambam counters the Ramban, and he says, that's not the transformation. So here, take a look in this translation. I found this online from this Friedlander. He says, through the intellect, man distinguishes between the true and the false. This faculty, Adam possessed perfectly and completely. Notice, what is the Rambam so far distinguishing between?
Intellect and instinct.
Well, he hasn't said instinct. What are the distinctions between?
Between right and wrong.
No, he doesn't say right and wrong, not yet. What is he distinguishing between? This is important.
True and false.
Say it loud.
True and false.
True and false. In Hebrew, emes and sheker. Until Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, everything was broken down to one distinction. Good. True and false. True and false. This bottle contains orange juice. True or false?
True.
True or false? Good. Is there any ambiguity about that?
None.
Is it subjective in any way?
None.
This orange juice is good. True or false?
Maybe.
Subjective. That's
okay. Depends. You think it's good? I don't.
Okay.
Well, maybe to some people it's not good.
Says the Rambam, that's the transition. Before the Eitz Hadas, everything was either true or false.
Absolute.
The right and wrong...
Absolute.
Yes, he says, the right and wrong are terms employed in the science of apparent truths, morals, not of necessary truths. Meaning, you cannot say about a fact, a scientific fact, the heavens are spherical. You know, Chicago sits on Lake Michigan. Is that good or bad? It's neither good nor bad. It's a fact. It's a scientific fact. It's a fact of reality. The earth is flat. It's not bad. It's just false.
At that time...
Similarly, our language, five lines in, expresses the idea of true and false by the terms emes and sheker, of the morally right and the morally wrong by tov and ra. Thus, it is the function of the intellect to discriminate between the true and the false, a distinction which is applicable to all objects of intellectual perception. This is the Rambam in the first volume of the Mor Nevuchim in Perek Beis. When Adam was yet in a state of innocence, he was guided solely by reflection and reason. As the Pasuk says, v'atachasrim ma'at me'elokim, he was not at all able to follow or understand the principle of apparent truths, the most manifest impropriety, vis-a-vis, to appear in a state of nudity was nothing unbecoming according to his idea. He could not comprehend why it should be so. After man's disobedience, however, when he began to give way to desires which had their source in his imagination and to the gratification of his bodily appetites, as it is said, and the wife saw that the tree was good for food and delightful to the eyes, he was punished by the loss of part of that intellectual faculty which he had previously possessed. He therefore transgressed a command with which he had been charged on the score of his reason, and having obtained a knowledge of the apparent truths, he was wholly absorbed in the study of what is proper and what is improper. Then he fully understood the magnitude of the loss he had sustained, what he had forfeited, and in what situation he was thereby placed. The Rambam says, the Ramban is wrong. He had free choice before, but his choice before was framed by the distinction of true and false. But by eating from the Eitz Hadas Tovara, now he has to distinguish between good and bad. Choices in life of good and bad are very difficult. Because as we said before, it depends on the perspective, depends on the circumstance. It's very difficult. Look at the world we live in today. Happens to be that the world we live in today, even emes and sheker are hard to distinguish, unfortunately. But the idea of tov and ra. One person's tov is another person's ra. And go try to convince them of it otherwise. It's difficult to have an objective measure. A lot of people in life, myself included, we all have this challenge that sometimes we say that something is tov when we're actually doing something that's not tov bichlal. So this is the Rambam's view of the transformation of the chait of the Eitz Hadas tov hara. However, we now come to the Ha'ara of Rav Kook, which is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Because until now, we have two kind of theoretical constructs, both of which have important implications for how we lead our lives in terms of making good choices. But Rav Kook adds a level of depth that is mind-boggling, incredible. I was blown away by this. And to do that, to think about that, we need to start with understanding the word das, which the Ramban suggested has to do with ratzon. With the Rambam, it doesn't translate the word this way, but it's leaning more in terms of the relative values of good and evil as opposed to truth. Somehow that's connected to das. What does the word das mean?
That?
Yes.
Religion?
No, with an ayin. Dalid, ayin, tough.
Knowledge.
Das, knowledge. Great. So here you have on your page the Webster Dictionary definition of knowledge. So what does it mean? The fact or condition of knowing something with familiarity gained through experience or association, acquaintance with or understanding of a science, art, or technique. The fact or condition of being aware of something. The range of one's information or understanding. The circumstance or condition of apprehending truth or fact through reason, cognition. The fact or condition of having information or being learned. The sup of what is known. The body of truth, information, and principles acquired by humankind, a branch of learning. These are all definitions of the word knowledge. How are they for working definitions of knowledge? What would you say? Are they helpful? Sounds good, right?
They're so all-encompassing of everything and anything that you could take any one of the definitions and apply it to anything, or you could take it away from anything. the breath of all of it is all-encompassing or doesn't mean anything.
Right. So what Vern is pointing out is the challenge of this kind of definition is that because it's so broad, it loses a lot of meaning because it's not specific.
Well, they say also knowledge is power because you have all that knowledge.
Good. So what we want to try to figure out, what is knowledge?
Between human.
Well, what is knowledge? That's what we want to figure out. Well, so this definition can be broken down. We can perhaps drill down and understand that there are different components. So turn the page for a second. On the top of your page, you have here a headline. Three words. What are the three words?
Chokhmah,
Bina, and Das. So these three Hebrew words, which actually, of course, form the acronym of Chabad, Chokhmah, Bina, and Das, are three Hebrew words that help us drill down to the definition of knowledge. Because each of these, if you go back to the Webster, can be parsed as to a different aspect or different branch of knowledge. What is Chokhmah? Chokhmah is wisdom. What is Bina? Bina comes from the word lehavin, to understand. And Das is knowledge. So my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Stav in Keren B'Yavne, once gave a terrific mashal, which we want to develop. Chokhmah is wisdom. You can memorize an entire book of law that is acquiring wisdom. You could take a child, you know, children?
Yeah.
Right? You've studied with, you've talked with. You could take a child, and that child can memorize an entire tractate. Right? A child can learn an entire masechta of, let's say, Maseches Kiddushin, how to get married. That's Chokhmah. Bina is to understand the implication of your statement. Lahavin davar mitoch davar, to understand one thing from another thing. So if you tell a child, you teach them Maseches Kiddushin, the laws of getting married, then you take the following. You take this platter of Pas Yisrael Yashon delicious Rogalach, and you say, what happens after you learn, you take a child to learn Maseches Kiddushin, is 11 years old. What happens if a man gives this to a woman and says, Hare Amakudesh Asli? What happens after that? That's it.
Accepting?
Yeah, she says yes. Okay. What happens?
They're married.
Yeah, they're married. How did he do that? The child was Mevin Davar Mitoch Davar. He understood from the circumstance that you presented to him that's going to be. That's, women have a special Bina Yaseira. They have a special intuition of knowing what is going to happen as the consequence of what just happened. So that's Bina. So Chokhmah is what you could call information or wisdom. Bina is intuition or implication, understanding. What is Das? So if you tell an 11-year-old kid, you learn Maseches Kiddushin, right? Is it kedai to get married?
I don't think so.
Can the kid answer that question? Chazal say a katan doesn't have das.
Yet.
He doesn't have das. He can have chachma.
Right.
He can have bina, but he can't have das. There's something about das that relates to the chachma and the bina in a more holistic way that a child is not sophisticated enough yet to apprehend. That's what it means, that a katan is a lav bar das. A katan, you can have a katan who is a genius, who has so much wisdom and so much intuition, but halachically, that child does not have das. So where does the das come from? What is das?
It's absorbed more.
Okay, so some of it is, like you're saying, is absorbed.
More information from the surrounding
you. Ah, but it's not just the information, right? Because information is chachma. Let's give an example. So here you have in source number 4, Vayeda Adam es Chava Ishto. The man knew Chava, his wife, and she gave birth. Physical intimacy is referred to in Tanakh as Das. Why is it referred to as Das? What does it tell us about Das?
He knew what he was doing.
A lot of things people know what they're doing. Why is intimacy called Das?
Knowledge of life?
To experience. To know someone in biblical terms is
yes.
Is to be at one with them, to be connected to.
Yes. This tells us something about Das. Has to do with connection,
experience,
and a deep identification. So Das means a person, as they grow older, this may be what you meant to say before, a person doesn't just acquire more knowledge. Through their life experience, their perspective is broadened through their interactions, through the kinds of things that they are connected to and immersed with and identify with, that affects the kind of person that they are. So Das means an intimate connection and experience.
Also from adult transferring to younger. I mean, he's between adult. Doesn't he see all that?
Das, we're saying, is this more holistic understanding of something that comes from a deep identification. And that's why if you look in the Malbim here on Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, he has this idea that Das is Masha, Hainu Masha Hukba, you see it's in 5, Benafsho B'yediyah Barura, that which is fixed in your nefesh, in your soul, as a clear understanding. What is that? Masha Masaka Yediyah Chushim V'Amuskolos Rishonos, first impressions. It's like Malcolm Gladwell's blink. Blink, what is the yesod of blink? It's that when you look at something for the first moment, you apprehend it in this visceral way more than using your cognitive mind. Das is not, well, how many apples are in the basket? It's not, what are the applications of this rule? It is, al yedei hargoshas hanafshius. It's the feeling, the gut feeling that you have. Where do you get a gut feeling from? It's developed through your senses, through your experience. Hargoshas hanefesh, the Malbim keeps saying. Based on this, Rav Kook says something amazing, and here we are. V'kasavnu. She'inyan eitz hadas, goram kol zeh. Shehevdel bein chachma v'das, says Rav Kook. What is the difference between chachma and das? Chachma nikra shemakir hadavar. Chachma is called that you recognize the thing. Yodea erko, you know its value. V'nimshach lo bibechira gemura. And you were drawn to it with free choice. Meaning, you see what it is, you assess it, you evaluate it. I have a bottle of orange juice. How many calories does it have? How thirsty am I? How does it taste? Is it fresh? I analyze it. V'das, das nikra acharei shehamik b'chachma. After you delved in with your knowledge, after you were immersed, what happens? Achre Shehem. One second. Lost the place. Here it is. Shehemik v'chachma v'nim shach achre ha'davar shachachma hechlita. So after your knowledge, after your chachma, your wisdom chose it. V'nidbak, and you were attached. B'chol kolchos of shem levad mi'achachma. With everything else that's not your intellect. Chachma means to apprehend it intellectually. Das means to experience it viscerally, personally. Now I understand everything, says Rav Kook. Vihine, bedavar shekulo tov. You see, I have in the tiny letters, I gave it to you in the bigger letters. Davar shekulo tov, something which is totally good. This is an incredible pshat. Something which is totally good, pure, unadulterated good. So what should you do when you have something that's totally good? You should not only analyze it with your chachma, what should you do? You should jump in with das. If it's all good, you want to be totally in on that. You want to be totally immersed in it. Amazing for you. It's all good. You want to jump in. Himayla gedola v'chashuva, das humayla gedola v'chashuva. Using your das when something is good is the greatest thing. Ma'ateras etzem ha'chachma. It builds on chachma. Kamo ikar ha'kol das es Hashem baruch hu. Like the main thing is to have knowledge of God. Al yedei ha'chachma, through the chachma, the intellect, makir gedulaso, we recognize the greatness of God. And then through our das, we have this experience of closeness and identifying with God. Amazing. However, what happens if you have something that is complex? It has tov and it has ra. What should we use when we address something that is an admixture of tov and ra?
Use our das.
Well, what happens if you use your das and jump all in to something that has tov and ra? What are you going to be stuck with? What are you going to be connected to and mired in?
Conflict.
Yes.
And ambiguity.
What should you use instead? Use your chachma.
And you have to.
If you use your chachma, then you can parse what is good and what is bad. And it's external to you, as Rav Kook develops. So something that is complicated as external, you can, from a distance, deal with it. You can decide. Exactly. You can look at it from the outside. It doesn't touch me. It doesn't affect me.
Right.
But if I use my das, then I become intimately intertwined with it. It becomes a problem. Das is only good, says Rav Kook, ki im bedover shu tov mikol stadov, with something, if you see where the picture is on the right-hand side, with the first word on the line is she'en. She'en adas tovar tov. Das is not good, ki im bedover shu tov mikol stadov. That is completely good. From all sides. Ve'en shayach klal ha'avaras ha'gvul. And you don't have any concern about going over a barrier. The more das in something which is good and godly, the more you're going to succeed.
Right.
Aval bedavar, next line, aval bedavar, sheish lo gam inyan hara mi'ezet sad. If something has some element of negative, aval pisha chachma tovalo, even though it's good to have chachma with it, shari al kalponim yesh bo davar tov, there is something good in it, so you should use your chachma, use your wisdom, analyze it, comprehend it, appreciate it. Mikol makom hadas, the concept of das, shehi kishur hakochos v'ham shachosim bo, that is connecting to the energy of it and identifying with it and connecting to it on your davar, on your level, hu davar mafsid ma'od. It is something very dangerous. Amazing. He quotes the pasuk from Koheles. What does Shlomo HaMelech say? Yosef da'as, Yosef mach'ov. More das, more headache.
More headache?
More headache! Says Rav Kook. He doesn't say Yosef chachma, Yosef mach'ov. More chachma, the better. But das, you have to be so careful
to make it
with das. Because when you're talking about das, it's kiviyachol, there is an English expression, and I don't mean this in a crass, God forbid, way, but I mean it in a literal sense. There is an expression in English of getting in bed with someone, right? There's an expression about that going into business. It's not nice to say in a shir, but I use that expression literally because that's what das is.
Right.
Vayeda adam eschava ishto. Before a person is intimate with something, yes, that's what people say. That's right. They talk about that on a business level. What Rav Kook is saying is on a spiritual level. Don't kiviyachol use das. Don't become physically, in this case it means emotionally, spiritually intimate with something that has tov and ra. I saw this idea, I'm like, that is incredible. Because this teaches us how to lead life in a modern context. Because in our community, in our Hashkafas HaChaim, in our Masorah, we are engaged in the world. And the world out there is a mixture of Tov and Ra. The music, the culture, the literature, the internet, it's all a mixture of Tov and Ra.
And one more, don't take a decision.
So what Rav Kook is saying is, he's not saying throw out Tov and Ra, things that have a mixture of Tov and Ra. He's saying use Chachma.
It's part of
use
life.
Chachma. He's saying use Chachma means look at it, analyze it, draw out the good of it, but do that from a detached intellectual standpoint. Right. You want to be involved in something, an immersive and an intimate experience that is reserved only for Torah. And so what we learn, just hang on 2 minutes, please, because we got to finish, is that the way that we can navigate the world now, according to Rav Kook, does not mean we shut it off, but we need to be constantly assessing ourselves as to whether or not the decision that we're making is a decision based on chachma or is based on das? Is it a decision of engaging tov and ra on a level that is intellectual so that we can draw in that which is worthy? Or is it an immersive, intimate experience that can leave us with some kind of stain? Technology, social media, these are kinds of things, these are tools that are tov and ra. So if a person navigates them with chachma, so they can be used, as Rav Kook says, you can draw out the tov. But if a person becomes so immersed in them that it becomes part of their identity, it becomes part of their makeup, then they're going to be left with the imprint of that ra. And I wonder if now, reflecting back, we learn a tremendously powerful lesson that as we reflect on our own lives, we start to realize, I can think about this for myself, when were times that I navigated a situation and I didn't use chachma and I used das and it left a stain on me? So what do we say now? This is Parshas Bereishis. The Ribbono Shelom just cleaned all the stains on Yom Kippur. We just had Sukkot that elevated us. We start the year now recognizing that moving forward, we have a choice. Whether it's like the Ramban said, we have a choice because we gave up our instinct. According to the Rambam, we had a choice before, but now we have a choice afterwards between Ra and Tov. But what Rav Kook is saying is we have a choice all the time in terms of how we conduct our lives, what things we physically ingest, what kind of activities we undertake, and how we live in the world, which is a mixture of Tov and Ra.
Right.
Our world is a mixture of Tov and Ra. And if we live in that Tov and Ra with Das, we're going to walk away with some Das stuck to us because that's what we identified with, as we used that English expression before, which you'll be mochel me if it wasn't appropriate for the shir. But that's the image that Rav Kook is saying. But if we use Chachma, we can use that external wisdom. Yosef Chachma is Yosef everything. He says the expression, HaChachma techaye es ba'alea, the Pasuk says. Chachma gives us more life. We can do more in this world. We can accomplish what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. But we have to be careful to limit our das. That's got to be Dvarim Shebikdusha for an immersive, intimate experience. And our chachma, our intellectual apprehension of things, that's going to be to navigate the world of Tov and Ra in which we live.